So I keep the microphone.
Yeah.
My first interview.
You put your hands on the wheel.
Okay, you just came back from Baghdad, from Iraq. Iraq is always Baghdad in my mind. from the Marbet Poetry Festival 2005.
Yeah, in fact, it was Basra.
Basra.
Basra is in the south. Yeah, it's at the end.
It was my mistake.
It's at the end where the Tigris and the Euphrates have come together in the Shatt al-Arab. And before they go into the Persian or the Arabic Gulf, they pass through Basra. It's 2 million town, second city of Iraq. And it's the capital of the south. It's the capital of the Shiites. In a way, it's the commercial capital. It's not the political capital. Because that's the religious of Najaf and Karbala. But Basra is the biggest city in the south, and the south is Shia, and the south is also the marsh Arabs. You know, the guys that were living in the marshes like Holland, where you have the beesbos, yeah, where people are moving about with boats and cutting reeds and building their houses and building their life and their culture and their myth. And they were always in resistance. It was always a hideout for the partisans fighting whoever was occupying Iraq, you know, the mythical land. And it was completely demolished and rubbished and shit by Saddam. And those are the guys that rose up against Saddam 13 years ago after the Gulf War. And nobody gave a damn, you know, and now they lost their water, they lost their land, and they lost their culture. And that's what Marbet is about, in my way.
You know? Are you sure they lost their culture?
No, they are reviving, of course. But they were killed. They were massacred. Their land was dried. You know, there was no water. So the whole thing fucked up, you know. But they are still resisting. You know? It's fighting people. It's like indigenous peoples in the south. It's real, yeah. I'd like to be part of that, in a way.
But can you recognize the people from the south of Iraq from the others? It's my personal curiosity.
I can't see the difference.
You can't see.
They may be a bit darker, but there are distinct differences in the sense that there's also a kind of competition between Basra and Baghdad. Basra is the second capital. It's the only port of Iraq. So it's a bit like Rotterdam. You know, and Baghdad is Den Haag, speaking in Dutch terms. Or if you like Moscow and Leningrad, yeah, Moscow is the, or Madrid and Barcelona. You know, you have these typical differences.
And what's the Amsterdam?
Well, I think Baghdad is more like Den Haag.
And the Amsterdam of Iraq?
The Amsterdam of Iraq. Well, I think it's Hella or Babylon, but I'm not sure.
Maybe Babylon.
I still have to go there, but I didn't manage yet. Because it's nice to be there, but it's also difficult because people are really scared for themselves and for you, and they don't recommend to move around. So being in Basra, being in Hotel Merbet, the place where the guests, the 400 poets and artists and writers were, that was for me also a kind of a prison, because you're not supposed to walk about as a foreigner just like that. You always have to be with people, take a taxi or get some security, and so you don't move a lot around. So it was against my instinct to have this limited space of movement. But since it was the second time, I was prepared, so I knew, and I had lots of stuff to do inside the hotel, so it was manageable. But I went to the hairdresser. You can see it on the pictures. You know, I went to the radio station on this huge compound of the late Saddam Hussein, which is really double Berlin Wall plus a medieval canal, water behind the walls, and then a bridge, and then you see a wasteland, and then you see big villas of Ali Kemikali, of the American consul and stuff like that in Basra. And then this one villa of this guy Majid Ali Hubblepub, who did the killing in Halabja with the poison gas, yeah? And this Dutch guy is now suspected of giving him the materials for making the poison gas that killed 50,000 people in Kurdistan. So this guy had a villa on this compound in Basra, and now there's a radio station in which is a government radio station, so they just took that
Did you find any evident difference with last year?
Well, last year Merbet was for me the first time of Iraq delving into deep culture. And there was a celebration of liberation and of meeting again old friends and being free to speak. And so it was emotional, more interesting and more movement. It was more a party, you know, party juice. This time I think it was pretty boring actually. It was not much music. They confiscated the booze that the buses from Baghdad had brought, so there was not so much.
Why did they confiscate that?
Oh, it would be offensive to many people in Basra if you start drinking alcohol, you know, that's not done.
Prohibition.
In fact, there was a writing on the doors of all the guests that that they make inspections. Yeah, they make inspections of your room to find if you have anything that might offend the legal and moral values of the people.
So now control is a moral value in the South.
I think really if moral values need control, they are not really moral anymore. But that's my personal one.
They are not really
moral anymore.
Moral.
Because for me, imposing morals is the opposite of morals.
No, I just think they use morals for controlling people. I don't think they are really moral.
Well, you can make your own morals.
Yeah, that's always like this. Anyway,
not always, because when people start imposing their morals on you, then it's not always like that you can make your own morals. That's what freedom is about.
Do you think now you can make your own moral in the south of Iraq?
Anywhere.
Anywhere? Really?
Even in Holland.
Even in Holland, but in Iraq now, if they check you and they don't want you to drink, do you think this is everyone self-moral? Do you think so?
Well, I think people should be free to choose what they consume, in a way, yeah.
So
that's my moral.
Okay, and their moral is that people should be controlled.
Yeah.
So that's their moral, yeah.
Yeah, it's like Trotsky said, their moral and ours.
It's separate.
It's not my moral, I can admit that our morals are different and still respect theirs, because I don't have to drink all the time. I wasn't drinking. And I see that people who drink really cause troubles. Yeah, so there's a reason to be against alcohol, because it can cause trouble. But it will cause only more trouble if you start forbidding it. That's the point. It's like heroin in Holland. Better give them heroin than make them work too much on stealing cars and robbing whatever. Back to Basra.
How long did you stay? When did you arrive in Basra?
I was about 10 days in Basra. I came through Kuwait, you know, and then you take a ride to the border, and then you take 1 hour to cross the border into Iraq, and then we had some friends that came to pick us up and brought us to the hotel, about 1 hour, and we came Saturday evening around 6. That was the 22nd of March or something. And then we stayed until, we stayed for 10 days. I left on Wednesday morning, the 6th of April. And the festival took place on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So we had a short week to prepare the program and to do a workshop, train some local guys from the radio and from the from the writers union. Some four people we really trained how to do streaming themselves, yeah, so they have made a good start and they can with some assistance probably produce their own content now in audio, either by streaming or by uploading programs, and we publish them on streamtime.org. and we also met some well, the radio station, for instance, they have a quite daring program where they face the audience who can phone with local officials that are held accountable. So an example is that they were speaking with victims of the the attack of the extreme Islamist militia against students that were making a picnic. Two students were killed by these militia guys of Muqtada Sarr.
Just for a picnic?
Well, they complained that they were dressed indecently and that they were playing the wrong music.
So again, moral.
Yeah, it's imposing morals. But killing students, that was a heavy thing. So there were lots of protests by the students. And then there was this program, and they confronted the office of Assad, the guys behind this attack, live on air, on the phone, like, hey, what have you been doing, and what's the reason for this attack, and stuff like that. So there was quite heavy, heavy program. And that is the kind of programs that they would like to spread around the world to other Arabic countries in the first place. Like, this is how we think we should make radio, to make democracy part of public broadcasting. Like, accountability of politicians is a basic thing of democracy, of course. So Basra is one of the, Radio Basra is one of the organizations like that are interested to make use of the facilities of Streamtime. But there's also two young poets who are really angry poets and who don't give a fuck about Merbet. They want to change, they want the free word, and they will do their also their own independent streaming on Streamtime. And there's a website that is for intellectuals, artists, discussing whatever. They also want to stream from Baghdad, so that is the kind of work that we've been also doing. Not just doing the streaming, but also training and some networking and spreading Dynabolic as a technical tool. And but also, like, hey, what is open publishing? What is freedom of expression? What can you do with new media? All those things come together. So if you are there, you know, it's not just theory. It's just, hey, this is how it works. That's nice.
Why do you think it's important to give a voice to this Arabic poetry festival?
No, we don't have to give them a voice. They have it. It's mainly a matter of amplifying or multiplying the voice. Yeah, and I still have the idea that it's good for for many reasons. If there is a possibility of collaboration between Iraqis living in Holland or in Finland or in Sweden or in Germany and people in Iraq, you know, the one effect of Saddam Hussein has been that more than 50% of the more open-minded and maybe more intelligent or educated people have left the country, and this brain drain is enormous. So on the other hand, I can also understand that most people are not very eager to return to Iraq right now. But the internet is, of course, a tool to communicate and to develop stuff and exchange, where you are not forcing people to go back physically, but they can do a lot of stuff on the net. So that is one argument for Streamtime, or for the concept of, you know, introducing, well, actually combinations of old and new media. Because I'm also an old-fashioned kind of guy that you will always have to try to reach the majorities, and majority of people who have no money to buy a newspaper, who may not have a television set, they always have a radio. So radio is still a powerful tool for development and for reaching, you know, the poor and the masses and stuff like that. So that is always a perspective. And if you make use of radio, like normal broadcasting and internet, you can have exchange of content through the internet, and you can reach a wide audience by just FM or AM radio. That's the combination of old and new media that we have central. And then, it was nice to find that it really Dynabolic works in practice, you know. For myself, it was the first time I did streaming. But I also saw some boys, of course, in Iraq that really dig it and handle it and are quite eager not only to learn, but also smart enough to pick it up rapidly and do have some content. So that's beautiful.
And what was the effect on these people of what you say, like free of expression, open content and open publishing? Is it something that's on the air as well in Iraq, or it's a new sound for them?
The concept of open publishing is quite new. It's a term that some people know, but what it really is of course quite unimaginable. But Bassam Hassan, that was working with us from the Linux users group in Baghdad, of course, he's quite well aware of it, what it means to be to have access, first of all, to the internet or to telephone or to electricity or whatever, but also what it is to suffer consequences of publishing stuff that might not suit the authorities, or of stealing passwords from the intelligence and make a business out of selling them using Trojan horses embedded in porn videos, of course. I mean, he knows his trade. So there's a lot of smart people who are even more subversive than you and me put together, I would say.
It's not so difficult.
But the trick is how to find them, of course. Yeah, so...
So, open publishing is not such a clear concept there, but still there are some people very much with a high level of technical skills. And
but freedom of expression is something that you could start with, because people like to express themselves, and they need to express themselves. And they haven't been able to express themselves. So there's a lot of shit coming out once you start open publishing.
But do you think that they are conscious that internet can be, the net can be the medium they can use?
No. They want really the best of the both worlds and the best of the newest and the latest shit. So people are chatting and yahooing and hotmailing and everything and DVDs and everything. They dig it a lot. And some people are doing also some interesting stuff, like this Madina.net, that's an open forum. It has quite some content and it's quite some... Of course, there's also diaspora exchange.
Madina.net, can you explain better what is it?
Madina is Arabic for city. It's a city forum. It's urban, it's secular, it's intellectual, it's artists. And they discuss cultural and politics in Iraq, of Iraq. madenah.net.
Thank you.
It's linked on streamtime.org.
So,
that's enough.
Yeah. I had other questions in my mind, but that's enough. It's okay, it's nice to have
some stuff. And it's also nice to
try to use the microphone.
Yeah, let's see how it sounds.
Yeah.